Welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast, the most influential and listened to podcast in auto detailing. Welcome to the community.
Hi, welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast. I'm Marshall. That's Nick. You can find us at hypercleanstore.com or go over to the Hyperclean Specialist group on Facebook. I'm going to pour myself a beer. We're going to get into some buy and sell. Nick, I'm going to go ahead and buy. I'm just going to go ahead and get out there, get in and buy. And buying an experience. You ever think of yourself as a peasant? Listen, I got introduced into the experience of being a peasant when it comes to soccer tournaments. Yeah. Completely unaware, completely unprepared. I mean, this was a not quite cold out, but still a little chilly. And I mean, it's not like the tents that you think of, like players would go into a tent. This was like fans inside of these clear plastic tents with like these chairs that you could lean back and had their own footrest. And I mean, it was like foldable couches that they put in these things. Like, I could not believe my eyes. And at the same time, I was really curious. Like, hey, you got an Amazon link? I want to see like really what's going on here. But when I realized I was a true peasant, one of the others that sat outside of the Palace de Football, well, that's when I realized that the lady sitting next to me stood up and she was wearing, I'm pretty sure that was the Snuggie that you saw off of like the infomercials. Like,
wow.
I went, wait, you really wore that? Like, full-on zippered thing and like this covered, like, I was amazed. So I'm buying the overall experience of my first soccer tournament where I went, okay, this is a whole different world once you're going to a tournament and you got a plan for the entire day. Like, it was cool to see everybody's way that they...
Watching your kid who's never going to amount to anything in soccer. Glad you spent all that money, mom and dad. Yeah, I mean, as we've talked about here before, and we talked to some guys that are in and around Hyperclean, the youth sports movement is a whole thing now. Right. I mean, it's a big money making scheme. I don't know why people aren't catching on to that, but, you know, why not go get a tent, you know, and spend another $2,500 that you probably don't have to watch Timmy play in a soccer tournament and sit the bench. And I mean, I got family members, my nephew's getting into lacrosse. I mean, all of it's just one big racket now. No.
Well, we're ready for that selfie when you get to go into the tent and you get out.
Yeah, I think what people will be shocked by is I won't be one of those parents like my kid's gonna go do it. It's like, no, man, I actually know professional athletes. It's really difficult. You kind of knew they were professional athletes. I'm going to sell today. I'm going to sell something kind of interesting. You know, we're in the detailing world, so a lot of things get sent to you and I. We see a lot of things. And I'm going to sell the professional struggler, the guy or gal that keeps popping up and said, I had such and such issue. And it's like the 15th time you've seen them pop up with an issue that you've never heard from anyone else. And for those that don't know, we have thousands of customers. We have thousands of interactions a month. We know if people are struggling with a certain product or another company's product, or it just kind of finds us, doesn't it? But one of the funny things I find about this is they are also some of the most vocal people about how much they know about X, Y, and Z. I know a lot about detailing. Then you look through their posts and you're like, wow, he's a professional struggler. All he does is struggle with this coating or that coating or this. So I kind of have found it interesting because I got sent a few posts and we're going to have some talks about some things we saw or have seen lately in Facebook groups, but I'm going to sell the professional struggler because I think it goes back to the, maybe it's time to be quiet and listen and look and learn from other people, but it never seems to be those guys and gals, does it?
Never does. That's a good sell. The professional struggler. Like,
I mean, right. It's like,
you're right.
Like, oh, I struggled with it.
That situation. I struggled with that too. And you go, wow, how many struggles do you have? Like, eventually you gotta not struggle, I think, you know. But
yeah, I mean, eventually a spray on and wipe off product is not this difficult. How do you continue to have so many problems? I just look, I'm saying it more as a funny thing that I noticed recently. With you know, I don't know. Obviously we have battery powered machines coming out now, and that's been a hot topic of this company's or that company's, and you know, it just kind of something that hit me in the face. It's like, yeah, this guy kind of struggles with everything. I've seen this guy's name before. He struggles with everything he does. He's a professional struggler.
All right. So you mentioned battery powered, and that's on the list. So it was down on the list, but let's jump into it. It's a great time to just flow into different conversations and what we love to do. It is right. This emergence, not only we talk about the emergence over the past years of electric cars, but then as batteries go into tools, you've been pretty vocal. There's one company that dominates the battery powered world, but other companies are catching on and really doing a good job of intermixing now batteries into a tool. We've got to start asking the question, because I saw it recently, and this is why I thought it was a funny conversation to have, is I saw a guy post in a group. He said, hey, I've got my 3401, it's used, and you know, I'm going to move everything over to battery now. Does anybody know a website that I can sell my tool?
Wouldn't it be Facebook Marketplace?
On a website, whether he's maybe thinking he's using an app for this website, but you're right. He's on a website asking what website to use to sell something. And everybody's got to know. You could do it on that group or on some, but let's get past the funny joke of it all and go, when do we decide, right? Like, do you run a tool all the way to the ground? Like, let's go through that for each of us. For me, I'm a definite graveyard kind of guy. I've got bins, in a sense, that you joke about some things with my system. The towels have a lot to be desired for. My towel system. Listen, my polisher system is not far from my towel system. It's, hey, something starts not working right, it goes into this graveyard that then I'll pick parts and do things off of it. And it kind of goes into this graveyard it goes into, and I just go buy a new polisher. I don't know if everybody works that way. You're currently with a much larger staff than you started with. So let's start from the, you know, what did you start with? And then we'll get into where you're at now. What do you do?
I started with a couple machines that I had. You know, I was a DeWalt. Rotary guy is what I started on, so that's what I kept with.
Which never died. You know,
yeah, never. Never. Like, and never got as hot as everything else. You know, one of the things that the companies still do, I think, a very poor job of, is I still think a lot of the DAs get exceedingly hot compared to the old Makita, DeWalt, you know, rotaries that, you know, quote unquote, seem outdated. But you don't like burn your hand on everything when you touch it.
Well, and or a lot of us have seen on DAs will complain about the glue and the adhesive from the backing plate having an issue and start peeling off, or we'll start complaining about that. And none of us have realized that that is actually heat driven from the tool itself.
Agreed. That's a great point. And for all those that don't understand heat cycling and just run the same pad on the same backing plate, they don't realize how much that continues to heat up. So, you know, when we released a video talking about a pad per panel, everybody kind of had a question about it, but you got to realize the backing plate on the pad, the backing plate on your tool, everything is damaged by heat. And quite frankly, a lot of DAs, I mean, you can go to the Flex 3401 gets massively hot. You know, Rupes machines can get very, very hot, and it just starts to wear away at everything, right? And you could run one of those old school rotaries, those DeWalts, and it was as if nothing was happening. Like the tool wasn't affected. So when I look at this transition to battery and what I'll do inside my company is I'm kind of intermediate. If things are easy to fix, I'm going to fix them, you know, brushes or things like that that may, you know, get damaged on a Rupes or something like that. That's an easy fix. I'm not going to take a bunch of time and sit there and fool with machines to get it working and get it working kind of halfway and try to get it through. You know, I've sent plenty of them off to service. I've sent plenty to the trash can. When I look at what I see guys doing in the transition to battery, you can tell how many have not messed around with them. I think there's a lot of guys that think it's going to be the fix for everything and they're going to all of a sudden never be on a corded machine. I've used, now, mind you, I haven't used all battery operated all day, but I see some, you know, little kinks in the armor, so to speak. Like, I don't know that I'd want to run this all day. You know, first of all, one of the things we got to say out loud, and I've been thinking about a video for our YouTube channel about this. I don't think people understand the word ergonomic. Okay. Ergonomic means you can hold the polisher or you can hold a tool in your hand exactly how it's designed all day long, and it's very comfortable. That means it's extremely ergonomic.
Here in Oklahoma, we say ergonomic.
There you go.
You got the fancy words for it.
Yeah. You mean just saying words how they're supposed to be said? That's not fancy. That's just, I guess that's called education out here. but most of these tools you're going to have to hold by the battery, not by the trigger. You and I see that. We have a Milwaukee at HQ you and I have fooled around with. It's a great tool. There's nothing wrong with that tool. I wouldn't call it ergonomic. Because it's hard to hold by the trigger all day long. I messed around with the new Rupes machine a little bit. Again, more comfortable with the battery. And all, by the way, the battery kind of droops down in the back. You're not careful on a curved hood. Boom. You're going to run that battery. You're doing a side mirror. You're going to run that battery into the door panel. Again, just because it's rubberized doesn't mean it can't leave a dent. You know, so I think people don't understand what the word ergonomic means. And I don't find any of these battery tools to be exceedingly good at ergonomics just yet. Now, I see ways they could become more ergonomic, right? Like the battery running all the way through the tool instead of a big bulky one at the end. And I'm sure we'll get there at some point. Like we see with some of the smaller polishers that the battery goes up into the tool. But I see guys spending a lot of money when they have a perfectly operational tool right there. And so I don't understand that very much.
Thank you for bringing that up. That's why I wanted to kind of have that discussion is, let's say I'm a... the interesting part about if you're going car to, you know, gas to battery, it's almost a different theory. When we're talking a tool going electric to battery, I got to ask that question sort of way I asked it earlier. How do you decide when it's time to get a new tool? Because just having technology, I guess if you're a mobile guy, you would have to look at, is this actually much better for me? Not having to have a cord and all the stuff, maybe generator, all that different. I could definitely dump my my cord for that theory, but whatever the theory would it be that I need to dump a cord and go with this technology?
Yeah, I think also, I know what everybody's thinking, man. It's your money. You can do what you want. When you're thinking about you're a DIYer or you're a professional doing this, you're kind of in the same boat, right? When you're a DIYer, if you just want to blow some money and get an electric, a battery powered tool because you want to, I completely understand that. If you're a pro and you got some extra money laying around and you're doing pretty well and you want to buy some battery tools, I don't really see an issue with any of it. From a common sense perspective, spending money just for the sake of spending money is not really what I see a bunch of businesses doing. Right. The tools work that we have now. They work really well. If you have one that's in good shape, some people I've even seen, you know, making comments about they have an unused tool. They want to get into a battery. It's like, whoa, I mean, you got thousands of hours of usage that you're just kind of throwing away. And using these battery tools, I don't think it's that much of a better experience. Like having the cord over my shoulder, I see people like saying, oh, no more cord over my shoulder. I'm like, I never found that to be that big of a deal. Like, I mean, I guess if it was like a 40-pound rucksack on your back, I could understand. It's a little bit of a cord. I don't know if I'm just used to it or you're used to it. I understand the fascination with all this stuff. And I certainly understand wanting to try new things and staying on the cutting edge of whatever profession that you're in. But I look at guys and I'm like, look, man, a lot of you guys are going to use these battery tools and you're not going to like them. I mean, I've already heard reviews on some of the newer stuff and they're like, it's okay. It's got this problem. You know what they didn't fix was the stalling issue, which has been an issue for however long. And I know there's a new polisher company, and we'll leave the name out, that is going to really surprise some people, but it's corded, but it's better balanced and it's got more power and it's got higher torque and it's, you know, a few hundred bucks. It's not $700. And, you know, for $700, man, I would expect the tool to do a lot for me. So if that's your expectation, I think a lot of people are going to buy expensive tools and go, yeah, this isn't that much better.
I think there's some of us that get to the point of a tool usage and then something new comes out and we go, okay, you know, I am kind of having some issues with this, or I am kind of, you know, and they'll start to evaluate the need to get a new tool. At least that's what I do. So maybe I just assume other people do it that way too.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you just want something new. I mean, I understand that part of it.
But let's say we're not really ready to go something new. We need to maintain our tool. You mentioned brushes, right? That the motor brushes and getting something new like that. You've sent tools off to get fixed. What do we, to me, I think a lot of the problems that we run into are electrical. It could be from, you know, just popping open the unit and getting a new power cord.
Yeah, I've done a lot of power cords.
Those new power cords really do help out a lot of other things. So that's, you've done power cords. I've done power cords. It's pretty simple. You know, anything else that we can go through?
Well, you have somebody, like, you know, you have the backing plate gasket. Sometimes when that starts to wear away, you're just better off taking it off instead of leaving it on there. It kind of hampers the tool.
Cutting. I used to cut all of mine.
Yeah, and that's fine. I mean, again, you want to oil some of the parts, especially once you get, you know, some hours on it. Keep all the internals oiled. All that stuff is great, right? Maintain your tool. I see a lot of guys don't clean their tools out. They got an air gun, but they never blow out all the compound dust and stuff like that. I mean, that stuff is pretty basic. Am I taking mine apart and, you know, rewiring something that's fried itself? I'm not going to do that. We don't have the time to do that. And the cost of a polisher based on the revenue that my business does, it's not worth spending time. You know, we have that on a lot of stuff. I mean, when our pressure washers, you know, get thousands upon thousands of hours on them, there comes a point in time where you look at it and you go, hey, man, you know, we're just better off, instead of continuing to try to bring this thing in for service just to get a new one, keep the pump, the pump's operating well, get a new motor, call it a day. You know, so it's all a trade-off. But, well, that, you know, we push.
You buy your power washers a certain way so that you can do that. Not every power washer generally. Yeah. And that's what I see the guys posting inside of, you know, show me your rigs, or, you know, they're showing what they got. And they're buying something that's fabricated together right from the manufacturer. The benefit of buying parts individually that you can pull on and off and working with somebody locally, is that's a big benefit.
Yeah, because one of the things that people don't realize is, you know, we run all gas pressure washers because we do so much work, and the motor is more likely to go out than the pump. Okay. You're more likely in that setup to have the motor go bad, throw a rod, whatever, than the pump, right? Because as long as you keep oil in that pump, I mean, they kind of last for, I mean, seemingly ever, especially if it's not having to draw from this long, you know, the water source is way over here and the pump's way over here. Well, on my trucks, the pump is right next to the water source. So my pumps don't work that hard, right? They just don't. And I get some people put a lot of stress on their pumps, but I specifically don't. And so I knew very early on through a couple mistakes, and now we've rectified it. Most of our pumps are going to last 5, 6, 7. I mean, some of them are indefinite. We keep them oiled. We change the oil out in them. You're pretty good, right? Because we don't have this long footage in between our water supply and the pump. So the pump's not really overworking itself at all. And so that seemingly lasts forever. But a motor doesn't, even if you keep it maintained. I mean, we had a Honda motor just throw a rod, like no hours on it. And it was like a warranty exchange. Now imagine if the pump is internal to that motor, I'm buying a whole new pressure washer. Instead, I'm just buying a new motor. And again, everybody's set up a little differently. There's a lot of guys that have moved to electric pressure washers. I think if you're doing a lot of work, you're asking for a big headache there. Not always, but in a lot of cases, and the people that do a lot of work stick with gas for a reason.
Yeah. Okay. So you did mention, yeah, we got power washers we got to maintain. I think of a regular maintenance that people should do, but I always failed at, is vacuum maintenance. I don't really care to maintain a vacuum. I'm just going to go buy a new one when it goes out, right? But do we start, and when do we start to put tools? When does that become part of a maintenance schedule, right? If you're going to, and especially we've got guys that are wanting to hire their new employees, their new team members. When you do a maintenance, I know we've talked about vehicle maintenance and way your guys are supposed to take care of their vehicle, and they've got cards that they can just get it handled, or, you know, they need to wash, right? Whatever they need to do. What about the tools? Where does it start to put into a maintenance schedule for you on, you know, tools?
Yeah, we essentially, guys should be doing something on their truck, on their tools, on everything when they have slower times. Okay, so let's say we just had a busy 4 weeks. They have a little bit of a slower Wednesday. The second half of that Wednesday would be, you know, get the truck into the shop. Like, we got a truck going into the shop Wednesday late morning, so we're going to move some of our schedule around. We got a truck kind of acting up. So what'll happen is I'll start to manipulate the schedule so they don't miss any work technically. I'll move some customers to Thursday. I'll move some stuff to late Tuesday. They'll have a few things to handle Wednesday morning, and then they'll get it to the mechanic, right? And that'll get handled the same day. We've already scheduled the parts to come in. We've already had the truck diagnosed and all that kind of stuff. So those are things that you learn as you go, that if you want to run an efficient business, you don't just let things get out of hand, right? And the same goes for if you're just operating as a DIY guy. Look, man, you use your tools, give them a blowout, give them a wipe down, check them before you put them back in, takes a couple seconds, and move on with your life. And for us, like vacuums, we do check the filters pretty regularly. I don't want, you know, your vacuum can actually smell up an interior. You know, you've smelled that before. So we do, my guys do keep a filter on the truck and just swap it out and throw it away. If it can be blown out, it can be cleaned up, that's fine. But most likely, you know, with the kind of stuff we see in auto detailing, it's just better to replace it. And the same goes for your polishers and all those kinds of things, is, you know, take them apart, put some oil inside of them, put some grease inside of them, do all the things you need to do. But, you know, to say it's on a maintenance schedule, that wouldn't be accurate. You know, it's like when we have free time, we do the same thing at HQ. We have times we look around in the wintertime and we can get some projects done, right? It's like, hey, we got some staff members, especially around Christmas time, everybody's kind of shutting down. You go, okay, we're going to clean up space a little more. We're going to organize some things. So it's all about finding these little times when your pedal isn't to the metal and going, okay, this is the time to go through the truck. This is the time to maybe remove a stain out of the carpet. This is the time to kind of do some things that you don't get all the time in the world to do.
Mm-hmm. So this weekend I realized something. I realized the season has officially started. We go, well, how'd you come up with that idea? I think I've realized the time for me, the season has begun, is when you can no longer go, all right, well, I can let that car go another week. It's okay. Because what happened this weekend when I was got done laughing at the lady in the Snuggie, hopped in and drove back home, I had 1,000 bugs, and not just the little guys, the full-on big bugs. And I go, okay, season is officially here, because there's no more questioning, do I need to wash this car? We now have bugs out full force. It can't wait. And that really is the biggest part of when people watch our videos about bug cleaning and how to clean bugs. Really, the number one thing to do is to just get them off as quickly as possible. Yep. Whatever form of protection, right? You should put protection down. But no matter what form of protection, you should try and get bugs off as quickly as possible. And I want to make sure we all understand this is a great way to do it, is using Eco One, right? Having Eco One and a towel, or listen, I love Eco One and using a Scrub Monster. It might sound a little odd, but Scrub Monster's okay out there on most paint and on most areas out on the front of the grill. Eco One and the Scrub Monster does wonderful fine, especially if you're in a pinch.
Yeah, no, I mean, once bug season hits, and I think this is something you probably know better than me, but I can remember living in a few places where bugs were really heavy, is it's almost like pollen season in the South, where people are like, we'll just let it come through, then we'll clean our car. It's like, no, man, that's a lot longer than you think. Pollen season's like 6 to 8 weeks. That's going to create a problem. Probably similar to Oklahoma. It's like bug season gets there and people take it as an excuse just to let it play out. It's like, hey, no, man, you got to get them off of there if you want your car to look. We had a car when we were in there, when I was at HQ a few weeks ago, that basically was probably headed to a repaint situation because of bug etching. We can sand it down, but I don't think there was going to be a lot left after a good sanding of the things we saw on that bumper. And so this is one of those things. Yeah, go ahead.
Let's get into that for a second, because we're going to see what we're going to transpire that happens when the start of this is we start seeing the cool photos of, man, you see this guy's grill and it's got all this all over it, right? Like, and you see then the photos of, hey, how come this isn't coming off?
Yeah.
And therein lies where we start to go, when is it too far gone? I mean, what are the steps to get a bug off? We just went through that, and using Eco One, using a Scrub Monster, or using Hyper Clean Bug, right?
Yeah. Eco One's in a pinch, like on the road. If you're able to do a wash, you need to be using Hyper Clean Bug.
Yeah, and a lot of people will go, well, it just happened yesterday, and it's going to happen again tomorrow, which is the theory, right? Like, and so how much time am I supposed to start continually spend cleaning bugs out the front of my – and that's where I go, hey, listen, if it's too much for you to do, then, yeah, grab some Eco One and just get them wiped off until you can do a full-on wash. But let's say, which we've talked about, you've got a vehicle you purchase, or – you're cleaning somebody's car and they keep talking about the bugs that are on there. And you're like, these aren't bugs. This is etched. This is stained. This isn't going to come off with any more scrubbing. What do I do next?
Yeah. I mean, some of it can get so severe, it's not repairable, which we've seen. And again, I think we'll be highlighting that in the future on a video, but look, I mean, it can be anywhere from having to sand that area, could be polish works, and it could be sanding, compound, and polishing. I mean, you just don't know without seeing it. But, I mean, it can get to the point of repaint a lot quicker than what people think, right? Like, I don't think people who aren't, plugged into this world understand how acidic bug guts are. And, I mean, it is really acidic to paint. And as we know, any type of acid sitting on paint, then being baked in, is a negative, right? Because you're not just talking about, you're not just talking about something that's benign that's on your car, right? You're talking about something that has the ability to actually eat away paint. And, we saw what tree sap in the same car was able to do to the clear coat, which is basically it stayed on there and kept heating up and cooling down and heating up. And all of a sudden the paint, it's almost like beneath the surface of the paint, and it's eaten away the area around it. And anything on your paint that's foreign to that paint system is a big problem. That's just the way that it is. And when you look at it from that direction, I think that that is the only way to look at it. If it's not supposed to be there, it's going to cause a problem. And bugs are not supposed to be on your paint. So if you just have that kind of, what would you call it? Black and white view of your car's exterior, you know, tar is not supposed to be there. It's supposed to be on the ground. It's a problem. Iron's not supposed to be embedded in your paint. When it's there, it creates a problem. Paint from someone's house is not supposed to be there. It creates a problem. And I think if you have that black and white view, it'll help you look at your paint system in a very clear light.
Okay, so let's talk about back to that buffing part, right? Back to that sanding part. We've got to start asking a question I think a lot of us are, well, when do I know to do that, right? When is it time for me to sand? When is it time for me to compound? There's people that are starting to ask this question with metal bumpers. This is the other interesting stuff that I've seen with some people asking is, you know, hey, I've got some stuff on my metal bumper, or what do I do? And there's people that have been going, oh, well, you should compound and you can polish that. Like, there seems to be this overarching, you know, answer to any issue on a bumper is to compound and polish. Hey.
Yeah. No, and look, it can solve a lot of problems. I mean, let's not downplay it. Compound and polish can cover up a lot of years of mistake. I mean, that's why most of us are detailers, is because we like the look of a car bringing it back to life. That doesn't mean everything's solvable. And especially when you're talking about plastic bumpers, I mean, Marty, you've seen at a dealership where a guy goes to sand some bugs and all of a sudden there's no paint left. Again, I'm not saying he's the most highly skilled sander to ever live, but they weren't thinking at the beginning of that project that it was going to be a repaint situation either. So you get into some spots where people want these black and white lines. It's not always that way when it comes to, you know, what's going to work and what's not.
And it's definitely not black and white with bugs, because there's a vast majority of people that think they know that it's a bug, and then they realize that it's actually a stain. But then there's people that don't realize the stain. There's a difference in the stain of just being a stain and a stain that is actually then etched. And once it's etched, I'm going to have an issue. And I hope that other detailers have this same issue of going, hey, I'm not comfortable now. Now I can look and visually see these almost like holes in the clear coat around where it used to have just a stain. And I should, if I'm a detailer that has a trained eye, I should be able to see the difference in a stain and then something that has damaged. We now have a eating into the clear coat. And at that point in time, I do want to draw a line, and I don't want to even put sandpaper at that point.
Again, it's all about what you're comfortable with. And also, have you told the customer or yourself, if it's your car, hey, I'm going to give this one last ditch effort, but I want you to know this is probably heading to the body shop. You know, I kind of tell people this all the time, is that when I break out sandpaper, and not always, but a lot of times when I break out sandpaper, I go ahead and get the customer comfortable with, hey, you're asking me to do something here. I can 95% sure I can pull it off. 5% sure that this could head to the body shop for a repaint. Are you good with that? If the answer is no, there's no sandpaper. There's no sandpaper. It's that simple. I let them know, you're asking me to do something. I'm pretty sure I can make it happen. I'm pretty sure I can make this scratch, this bug etching, whatever, look a lot better, maybe even go away fully. I'm cool with that. I want you to acknowledge, whether that's by signature or verbally or over text, that I told you that if this goes too far, you're taking it to the body shop and I'm not responsible. Where people get in trouble with sandpaper or get in trouble with trying to heavily compound something like this is they don't tell people that this could end up at the body shop. that's where I find people have a real hard time with the honesty, because they want to sound like a hero, right? They want to sound like they can fix everything. I think that is the silliest way to go about it, because all you're doing is putting yourself in the crosshair, right? Go, hey, man, I'm pretty sure I can make this work for you. I just want you to know, though. And we had this not too long ago on a Range Rover where somebody nicked it up with their diamond wedding ring above the door handle. And I told her right away, I said, hey, this needs to be repainted. I mean, this is like down. She's like, well, if you can make it look better. I go, okay, 50-50 that I'm going to be driving this down to the body shop. You good with that? I'm good with that. Of course, it ended up at the body shop. I told her it was going to. She's like, hey, I appreciate it. I'm going to pay you for your time. Please take it to the body shop. She wouldn't have had that same reaction if I'd been like, yeah, I can fix this. And then I burnt through everything. You know what I'm saying? So it's all about a setting and expectation. If you're somebody doing it yourself or you're doing it for someone else, when you bring out sandpaper and you're trying to fix damage, you got to have enough self-awareness that, hey, man, there's a chance this could end up at a body shop getting repainted.
And that's it. It really is probably a thing that people don't hear quite often enough, but it is what should be said. Yeah. I never really wanted to get to the point where I was running that risk for people. I think I always assumed that I might mess something up. So if I, to me, the way I looked at it, sort of the way I talked about it earlier, I began to see where I could see the difference in what one stain and what damage would be. And I didn't even risk a bug with any, I just didn't even tell them it could.
But some customers want to risk it because they're going to go get it painted anyway, yeah. Right? Some people are not going to be able to live with it. They're going to be like, hey, I can't keep looking at all this ugly stuff. Can you do something? I can try. And if it works out for you, great. If not, this bumper's going to, this hood's going to the body shop. And so that's the way I always have done it. Not always. I said, I learned the hard way that the way to do it was just to be upfront with them. Hey, man, I'm not a miracle worker. Okay. I hope I can make this better for you to where you like it. But you know, some of this stuff, if it's really bad, is so bad that I'm really just trying to do my best. And if it all works out, you kind of got away with one. Otherwise we're going to the body shop. And I think I've had customers say, hey, I don't want to take that risk. And so you don't. Then I've had other people say, well, I can't live with this, so I'm going to have it painted one way or the other. Can you just try? And I think that's where I found the happy medium of let them make the call. Because if they make the call, they're not going to be pissed that you burnt the bumper.
Oh, good point. Good point. All right, so I've got a new appreciation that it is. I really think it is for me. It's something that's kind of I've seen around, but it's a new appreciation. And there's something inside of it that I'm appreciating. Now, the post that I've seen that we've all seen is, hey, you know, show me those rigs. You know, hey, let's see what you got. And I've always really thought from the outside, boy, it's cool when people have these elaborate. And I mean, it is top of the line throughout the whole thing with connects here and carpeted's here. And, you know, we had a guy a long time ago when we did the pub, he was all on the pub putting down flooring.
Yeah.
Right. And doing this a lot. Listen, I love the idea of the carpet inside. My first mobile van was a 78 big Chevy van that I bought from a paraplegic.
Paraplegic. Legic,
whatever. Listen, I got Oklahoma E's, right?
So I'm saying
English, right? So we pronounce things. Y'all say potato. We say potato E. Whatever, whatever we want. You know,
just say whatever. So,
it's whatever here. It's a Wild Wild West still.
Let's just call it a handicapped accessible van.
But from the 70s. So what did it have through the whole inside?
Shag carpeting?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I can definitely appreciate guys who put flooring or have this fancy. I can do it because, listen, I was living large with my shag carpet. Let me tell you
about it. Yeah.
But here's the fun discussion for me is when people go in, and I saw this recently, and they go, hey, I'm going from a truck to a van. And so then they take and they put their own twist, which you and I are doing with building out more of our manufacturing, right? We want to see how far we can go with our own style that puts our own signature on the way we do it. So this guy had, I saw a post where a guy had a filing cabinet system from like an office, right? Like, you know, like that they put it in.
Yeah.
That's something that he put into this van. I've seen people, you know, manufacture, create things out of wood, and then they put stuff out. Like, I love all this. And it's really is a new appreciation, because I was an open trailer with milk cartons, milk crates, like basic.
Dude, I think it's awesome. You know, I applaud guys that take it to that length, and I'm like you. I sort of geek out and say, hey, that's pretty cool. I've also seen the negative of that, where you and I have talked about, I think I did it on Ask Me Anything on Saturday, which is I've also seen guys drown themselves in the debt to do those things, to build out a shop and you know, spend 80 grand that we found out they didn't have, or, you know, to now have a $65,000 rig for just them detailing. Hey man, if money's not an object and you've saved it and you're doing really well, I think that's awesome. And I'm like you, man. I like seeing what people come up with. I think also, what if you'd have bought a $20,000 rig and spent $45,000 on marketing and selling your business? Better opportunity for you? I don't know.
Well, so let's talk about that for a second. I love that you brought that up. This weekend, I love to point this out inside of my family, of the way cars look, the way things appear. Right? Your appearance is what attracts, right? When you go past, will somebody of high net worth buy something off of a magnet on a car? Will somebody buy something off of a car in general? Should you put this big giant wrap? I mean, there is reasons to believe that somebody would pick up the phone and call for a service because they see it on your vehicle. I mean, I guess there's some type of percentage that it is viable. I think the part that people miss out on, which was the conversation this weekend, was we had seen at the soccer tournament as we were pulling in, just one of those, you know, on the back glass, and it was, I think, a plumbing contractor or something like that. So they didn't throw it all down the vehicle. It was just on the back glass, and it was just very simple. The thing that I really appreciate about this guy, and no matter which direction the listener, what I can appreciate, or I can say, hey, hey, man, whatever direction you go on your graphics or big graphics or not graphics, I can really appreciate this guy. I saw tire shine. I saw a little sparkle to the paint. It wasn't like immaculate, but it was not dirty in whichever direction. This is the biggest problem I think everybody has. Then they choose not to, whether that's every week, maybe every, let's even go this way, 3 days. Should, if you believe that this amazing thing that you're going to put on your vehicle is supposed to get all this money and all this cost for it, should you let it even go 3 days without a full detail? Should it at the very least go? I mean, no way. It shouldn't even go a week. But most people that are going to put all this stuff all over the vehicle and think it's going to do something for them, then the sad part for me is they don't regularly clean it, and it just doesn't look great.
Well, you kind of had an up close and personal look there in Tulsa with a certain company, right? That paid all this money for multiple trucks. And I mean, what you said, they barely even would get a season or two where those trucks looked great. So yeah, I mean, that's the thing about these elaborate setups, man, is that you know, here you are spending 50 grand on a van and a setup, and you're not spending the time maintaining it, right? I know we have one of the biggest, the largest construction company here in Las Vegas. They require anybody that has a company to truck, anybody that has a company truck has to get their vehicle washed every week. And if you don't, you get penalized. Minimum. And they're on construction sites, right? And they're like, hey, you don't drive around like that. They're number one in town for a reason, right? It seems like a small detail, and we all get caught up in our own work, and it sucks to, you know, have to wash your car and detail your car after detailing all day. But again, if you're already spending money on this elaborate setup, I think your point is you now have committed to a lot of maintenance. Yeah. You've committed to a lot of maintenance that if you don't do it, then you've made it all worth nothing. Right. Because you just spent all this money. And that's why I tell people, you know, a lot of guys would be better off just buying one of those small transit vans, leaving it white, having a good setup on the interior, make sure you can afford everything. Cause you're just getting a start, man, and go on about your life. I get asked about graphics. I would say it's one of the most reached out things.
Continually always,
you know, and it's like, people would not believe it. I now have a firm belief after doing this a long time. If you just bought a white vehicle, left it alone, a good setup that allowed you to work efficiently, and you took the rest of that money and you spent it towards building your brand name out there, 99% of people would be in a better position. So one of the flip sides of me seeing these elaborate setups is I go, God damn, they're cool. Really cool that they did that. And that was a great idea. And look at what he did here. Cool. That's all time you spent away from your business, building your business. And you spent it in manufacturing this thing. And I love that you did it. But I, as a guy that's been at the beginning before, I go, man, I can see five things I would do way before I ever did that. Now, if you have the money to pay somebody to do all that and they can handle it for you and it still allows your business to run and you got multiple trucks on the road and you're like, hey, we just have this company build them. It's easier. You know, they do an awesome job. I just foot the bill and I see it that, but I see a lot of guys spending a lot of time on their rigs. And I go, man, when I was at the beginning, if I could tell anybody at the beginning now, or that's still trying to get super busy, spend your time selling your company, because at the end of the day, man, that's all that matters. The rest of this stuff, I mean, I know guys that have made a shit ton of money in this business. You wouldn't believe the shops they're working out of. You wouldn't believe the vehicles they're working out of. You'd sit there and tell me that isn't true. And I'll be like, that guy's been in business 15 years. He's killing it. I see it all the time. So while I admire all of it, I also look at the negative and go, that's time you're not getting back in your business, man, if you did all that work.
Yeah, okay. So white van, putting some wheels, putting some rims on there? There's a little bit of got to put some window tint, right?
Got to put tint.
There's some things that would be not just so bad. I would like to put some wheels on there.
Yeah.
What about white with chrome wheels? Are you doing chrome wheels?
Hey, chrome wheels are coming back, but I'm out on chrome. I got chrome on my Dodge that I've never replaced. You and I come from a time when it was all chrome. I mean, chrome was the thing, and supposedly they're coming back for sure. But if I had white, I'd put some nice, you know, black wheels or gray wheels or something like that on it, and call it a day.
But at least something, right?
Yeah, and look, like I said, I'm all into this. I love that guys do this stuff. We just get so many conversations about people wanting their business to do better, and then you see that they dump 20, 40, 60, 70 hours into their van.
And to me, like I was saying, like, in it, whichever direction somebody goes, it really is about how it regularly appears. No matter what brand of clothing you wear, as long as it's clean, no matter what you do, as long as it's clean, you had to have learned that somewhere. I know I learned it. And for me, it was a struggle. And I've talked about having to break some habits before. And the habitual thing for me, I think, was inside. A lot of times the inside I might let get a little too far gone, but the outside I did always like to have some type of shimmer, some type of shine. And I've always enjoyed washing and just cleaning a vehicle. And I really wondered from you, when did you learn that? For me, I know it would have had to have been something that came from inside of my family, right? We talk about, you know, what do you learn? How do you learn things? And where does a family to fall into that? I remembered my mom used to trade for me. She used to trade for washes all the time. To get her car washed, she would trade. For me, it was pizza on a Friday. She would bring me pizza, you know, when I was a mobile detailer, and it was a guarantee that I could feed guys and we could do everything, and mom was going to bring pizza on Fridays. But turns out it actually was how she met my dad. And she would hustle around to find out who was going to wash her car, and she finally suckered this guy to wash her car for her, and then that's how they started me. And I just go, you know what? I really think that's why it's ingrained maintenance, quote unquote. Regularly cleaning has always been a thing for me. And I was curious, can you link back anything of why you've always found regular cleaning be the avenue for you?
Yeah, I can't. I grew up in a house with family members that were really OCD about the house. So my house was super clean. I grew up in a very clean house. We didn't have the biggest house or the nicest house, but, you know, the lawn was going to be cut. The interior of the house was going to be clean. Stuff wasn't left out. Food wasn't left out. And it's the same thing for me now. Like, if I go home and there's like a lot of, I mean, we pay a housekeeper. I mean, it's just like, I'll cut a lot out of my life to afford a housekeeper. Like, I want things clean. I want things simple. I don't love clutter. That's just been, and again, I think it's sort of how you're born, right? And what you're born into is a lot of sometimes the way this goes. So for me, even when I didn't have the nicest cars, my cars were clean, especially on the inside. I didn't have stuff all over the place. I didn't have a dirty football locker. I didn't like none of that. The thing is, it doesn't work for me. Like I physically just don't like it. Right. So there's times that I'll get in my guy's truck and I'll see wrappers. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? And so at the end of the day, for me, it's more about probably a personality flaw more than it is a positive. But it's like, I can't stand things around. I can't stand dirt. Like, I tell people this all the time. When you look on your steering column, if I see dust there, that shit bothers me to no end. Like, I just can't handle it. Like, I'm just like, why isn't this? I can't handle it. And so for me, it was never like a learned thing. It was just sort of like, that's how I was. Right. Like, I wasn't going to have like dirt and grime and all that kind of, I just didn't like it. That's why I'm so neat when I detail, because I don't want to have shit all over my hands and all over my clothes. And if I was a mechanic, I'm telling you, it'd be the same way. I would just find a way to do the shit where I wasn't dirty everywhere. I mean, I've taken cars apart. I'm like, I'm not doing that.
I still, and I'll laugh at this, I think forever is you going, yeah, well, the reason why I don't sit in front of a wheel, I sit to the side of the wheel so I don't get crap all over me. And I just go, no, I've never thought about it like that. I always sit in front of the wheel and stuff gets all over me. I never thought I should move to the side of the wheel and then stuff won't get all over me. Like, it's wild. I mean, it's just, I think this is some of the wild things that I've been seeing lately. Here's two of them, and these are, to me, is, and we've talked about some crazy things. There's two that are getting a little berserk, and that one was apparently AI is getting so crazy. They're now fighter pilots that are going against AI fighter pilots, and I'm just like, that's a little bit too much for me. It's a little bit far. I'm a little bit out. Are you a deposit guy? I'm a little bit I've never been a real issue with deposit guy.
What do you mean, like taking deposits on work?
Yeah, and then if you don't do the job, you don't give the money back. Like, I saw this post recently, and it was as confusing as the AI, you know, fighter pilots, because right after the AI fighter pilots was buying PPF on Amazon. Like, this is all, like, wild stuff that I just didn't even know that was happening. I didn't know that there was people that would charge a 25% deposit, show up to the job site, tell the customer, well, actually, it's $100 more than what you put your deposit down for. And then if the customer balks and says, okay, well, I'm not going to spend it, they keep the 25% deposit. I mean, that's borderline scam. You piss the wrong person off in that moment. Let's not even talk about, like, oh, my lawyer's going to talk to you, guy. No, it's straight to jail time. Like, straight to you getting picked up for scam. Like,
yeah, we take a deposit at the shop. You know, we don't take a deposit from everyone. If it's a known customer and I've done business with them, then that's not the case. But if it's a new customer, we take a deposit, especially on big jobs like, you know, PPF jobs, window film, that kind of thing. Even 5-year coatings, we'll take a deposit. The reason is a deposit holds people accountable for showing up, right? Because what you have in the world, unfortunately, is the 10 to 20% have ruined it for the rest of us, right? Where people book an appointment, they won't keep it. You've booked them into your shop. Now you don't have somebody booked and your guys can't work and you can't work and you're not making money. The deposit thing, you have to change
the terms, right? That deposit came at a certain from the estimate.
Well,
from the
look, this is where guys are getting really confused. First of all, when you give somebody a final price on something, and I'm guessing this guy was mobile because he showed up to the job and then said, hey, your car's in worse shape. If you're going to take a deposit, you probably need some pictures so you can take a look at what's going on so you can give an accurate assessment, or you got to eat it and say, hey, I got to do a better job of quoting jobs. Or I got to tell them a range. Hey, the service you're asking is anywhere from $250 to $400, depending on the condition, which I will assess with you when I get there. Then at least you've been honest about it, that I can go all the way up to $400, depending on the condition of your vehicle. The thing is that I think people think that a deposit is going to fix everything. And you got to be so good at business to handle deposit situations. Let me make something clear. If somebody books a full front PPF here, and let's say the deposit's $1,000 and they no call, no show, I'm probably keeping the deposit because it's non-refundable.
Sure.
Okay. If they call me and go, hey, I have something come up, I need to bring this at a different time, I'm going to give them the chance to reschedule. And I'm just going to say, hey, it's the cost of doing business. The next time they don't show up, I'm probably keeping the deposit, and they're well aware of that. But if you're going to take deposits, you got to be so buttoned up about it being non-refundable, why it's non-refundable, that this appointment is serious business, I have a business to run, then deposits don't become an issue. Because you know what you find out? Most people don't miss their appointment with a deposit. Most people aren't a problem if they've put that down. When it becomes a problem is when you're sort of half-ass about explaining the deposit, why you're taking it, what that means, that it is non-refundable. It has to be non-refundable because, look, I got a shop to run. I need to keep my guys busy. We need the work to be here because I'm not going to schedule someone else during your time. So this is your time to be here. We want to make sure we give your vehicle the attention it deserves. So when people say deposit solves everything, it does solve everything for businesses that are being run very well. If it's not being run very well, deposits quickly go to sounding like a scam. That is a fact.
Absolutely, absolutely. So is PPF a scam on Amazon or what?
No, of course.
I'm not even going to get into the AI pilots. That's just where you and I aren't getting there.
Yeah.
I don't have a pilot's license.
Look, there's a guy going around. Yeah, there's a guy going around saying, hey, you don't need to pay somebody to PPF your Tesla. He's got Tesla kits. And look, man, if you want to talk about things that take skill, it's not easy to tint your vehicle. Don't sit there and tell yourself it is. It's not easy to two-step correct your vehicle for most people. It isn't. I've seen that go so horrifically for people, from tint to two-step correction and coating to, you know, PPF. I mean, we had a guy try to do this on his brand new GT3 Porsche, and Marty, there were knife marks in the paint. There were knife marks in the carbon fiber. The PPF looked like crap, and he wanted to sit there and judge what we were going to do to his car. There are some things in life, and I don't want to say that you can't find the one guy who's great at everything and he can magically PPF his car and he'll be good at it. Sure. The likelihood that that is somebody buying PPF on Amazon, like, people have no idea. Like, and it's such an insult to everybody that you think you can do something incredibly difficult. And oh, by the way, not all PPF is created equal. Okay. And I can tell you that from major brand to major brand, let alone a brand that's being sold on Amazon for, you know, 30 cents on the dollar of what a good PPF should go for. Like, it, Marty, you know what this all is. I mean, it's all this idea that I'm going to get over on the system and I'm going to do it myself and nobody's going to get me. And it's like, okay, man, whatever. I mean, this PPF, wait till you have to pull it off and it starts yanking your paint off. Then we'll see who's laughing last and all that kind of stuff. Like, this is just isn't my world. And I don't think it's yours either. Like, I have a respect for professionals that work around my house. I'm not rewiring my house. That isn't happening. Why? I could figure it out. I'm sure I could figure it out. I don't want to burn my house down. So I just don't do it. Okay? And for all of you that do, I guarantee if I walked in your house, I'd be like, this house looks like shit, because you're not a professional. I told you a story about my uncle. I got an uncle that's like this. He's DIY'd his whole house remodel. When you go in there, you're like, yeah, you remodeled this. I mean, great for you. You save some money. But when you go to sell it and everybody sees the crooked cabinet or the flooring that's not like exactly lined up, they're going to be like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, for somebody to try to PPF their own car, good luck to you. Good luck to you, because it is a true skill that people work a long time to be good at.
What about headlights? That doesn't seem too difficult. Like,
oh, okay. PPF
kits for headlights. Like, come on. I mean, let's say I get it done, though. Okay. I can put down PPF on a headlight.
Okay.
So don't tell me otherwise. I can watch some videos and I can put PPF on a headlight.
Okay. Great. Here's a couple things about headlights people don't realize. A, if the film starts to fail, then you got to get it off there. And when you get it off there, what happens if you pull the protective coating off the headlight?
Wait, what are you talking about? I'm just putting
down
on a headlight. That's pretty simple.
Exactly right. What are you going to do if it starts yellowing? What if you're going to do when the edges start to peel? What are you going to do when all...
What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly right. You see what I'm saying? And I know you know this stuff, but it's like, you know, part of the thing that's happened in the car market my whole life is DIY people don't know when to draw the line. And you and I have walked onto a dealership lot or been brought into a dealership lot and they go, can you fix this car? And you go, what happened? Well, Jimmy bought it from us. He took it home. It's about 6 months old. And he went and bought himself a DeWalt polisher. And you go, oh yeah?
Or let's go back to what we talked about a little bit ago. Cleaning bugs.
Yeah.
We've all seen a tree sap, right?
Yeah, that tree vehicle we saw.
You see these little lines and these little hazy marks all around where somebody goes, oh, no problem. I can get that off. So, you know, yeah, of course, the PPF on Amazon, it is all a joke and it is funny, but it is serious. Just the same as cleaning bugs doesn't seem too serious. Seems a joke, but it is also serious. Like, it,
Well, you know what we saw? You and I saw on this, what was it, a blue Challenger? And a guy, it looked like they took a Scotch-Brite pad and tried to work the tree sap off. And may have damaged the paint to a whole repaint situation. Right? Like, this all seems like a joke until you get the bill. Right? And that's what people don't realize is, like, I see all of this stuff on the internet, and I think it's great. Like, we got a bunch of prosumers that have come into our brand, and they're really meticulous about their car. But even those guys know where to draw a line. They're like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. I took it over to so-and-so's shop, and he did that. Like, you don't realize the damage bad PPF could cause to your car because you've never seen it. So you just assume it hasn't happened. Right? Like, that's the thing you and I have talked about on this podcast so many times is somebody goes, and this could be a professional Facebook group. This could be a prosumer group. This could be somebody saying it to you. They'll be like, well, that never happens. It's like, buddy, that happened 52 times last week that we know about. I mean, just exponentially around the country, that happens thousands of times a day. They're like, that never happens. It's like, no, you just don't know that it happens. Right? Just like you don't know that they can total your car upon delivery and never put it on the Carfax. That never happens. No, no, you didn't know that that happened. You didn't know that Carfax doesn't mean anything. You didn't know your car was in an accident. You know why? They didn't tell you. That doesn't mean it didn't happen. Right? And that is what, I mean, pretty much my whole life. You know, look, I'm since 1998, I've been in the car business. What people don't know about the car world could fill a book. But they're convinced that these things don't happen. So there's the drawing of the line, so to speak, where it's like, dude, you just went and sat at one dealership near your house for 1 week. You'd be astonished at what goes on with cars. Not just from the dealership, stuff that's traded in because somebody did something. Stuff that's having to be fixed because somebody at home did something. Something the dealership did that you don't think they normally do. Right? Like, you, I think people, if they sat there for a week at a busy dealership, Marty, you spent a lot of your life in this world. Do you think they have any clue of how bad shit goes?
No, not at all. And the expectations of being able to turn a bumper that has flash marks from bugs all over that they left sitting. Let's just go into the car wash and the detail world. It goes straight into the dealership world. Like, the appearance of a vehicle that no longer looks the way it used to, but somebody hasn't really maintained it, but they expect a magic wand to be waved and something magic to happen that just does not turn back time. Which is why you and I talk heavily over and over, and which is why I know our listeners appreciate and also join in to the idea of regularly maintaining what you enjoy, and that is your vehicle. Keeping it cleaned up, keeping it pristine, and enjoying it the way that it should be. Yeah. Great discussion, Nick. We'll see everybody next week.
All right, guys.